On this week's Devils in the Details, United have confirmed the signing of Joshua Zirkzee. We already discussed Zirkzee as a player. We add some additional thoughts here now that the deal is confirmed. Negotiations continue for Jared Branthwaite, Matthijs de Ligt, and Lenny Yoro. In fact, by the time you're reading this, a deal might have even been finalized for one of the three. Willy Kambwala leaves the club, and Raphael Varane joins Como in Serie A. We discuss what we think about the ongoings and what they might say about United's strategy. All right, Case, a lot of news this week. Are you used to seeing this much news about a United transfer window in the middle of July while the Euros and the Copa America are still going on?
No, I would say no. This is definitely earlier movement than I think we're used to. That said, I think we did say something similar last year. I think the Mount deal got done pretty early. I think we were actually recording live when the Mount deal got done, and that was in early July. So I think it's more about
Something to do with Chelsea having to negotiate some kind of financial something. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. Well, regardless, I think the breadth of rumors is much wider this year. I think off the top of my head, we have been linked to, if you include Zirkzee, at least 7 or 8 players reputably. That's a ton. It's a ton. So yeah, it's been a lot of action.
Yeah, we'll touch upon them all briefly today, as well as some kind of what I've been describing as garbage tier links. I guess with that, we should just get straight into it, because that's going to be quite a lot of content. Let's start with Zirkzee. Deal done. United did not pay his release clause. Instead of paying the 40 million euro release clause, they've agreed to pay 42.5 million euros in 3 installments, 1 each year. They felt that worked better for them. I think they might have also paid some agent fees, according to some sources. We discussed this in detail on a recent episode. Case, now that it's done, any additional thoughts?
Well, there was something that you and I think want to talk about, which was the idea of a two-striker system. And, well, I have some thoughts on it, but how you open this up, because I think we have different views on this.
Yeah. So I think my starting point would be based on what we've seen this United team do under Ten Hag. We've seen two striker systems, I would argue, or two things resembling two striker systems. The first was that 4-4-2 diamond that they played early in the 23-24 season. Actually, chronologically, that was the second. But the first I'm going to talk about was that one. That was pretty much a disaster. I think the strike pair was Rashford and Hoyland, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and
it was at the front of a diamond. Yeah, Brighton. United got decimated. I think they might have run it again at Bayern Munich, but they very quickly got rid of that strategy because it wasn't working. It had a lot of really bad implications in the press that, you know, the press was already falling apart, but I think that match was an outlier of bad at that point in the season. And overall, I don't know, maybe this is a personal bias, but I don't really see it with diamond systems. I think you become extremely reliant on your fullbacks. I think United's fullbacks are the type that are even better playing in sort of midfield, inverted, deeper areas than, you know, the final third and overlapping with pace and getting crosses into the box. And so I never really saw this system with United. I don't think this is something that United should look to or will look to revisit now that Zirkzee is here. The other system was one that was moderately successful in 2022-23 when Wout Weghorst came in the January transfer window. And I think essentially what happened was Rashford was on fire at the time. Weghorst was not on fire in front of goal. But I think his impact on the team in what he offered, largely I think probably defensive, but also some stuff related to having a conventional striker in a way that Rashford wasn't. I wouldn't even say that's one of Weghorst's main strengths, but I think he offered it more than Rashford. And so I think that led Ten Hag to devise this system where essentially what Weghorst played as like the most advanced midfielder in a three with Casemiro and Eriksen, sometimes Casemiro and Fred. And then Rashford played ahead of him with Sancho and Antony as the wingers. And I think that worked quite well. It allowed Rashford to have a basis to run beyond the opposition center backs, which is what he obviously likes to do, without having to worry about some of the holdup aspects of being a lone striker, which he is. It's just not really his game. And so that second system with someone like Xerxes and Højlund, I think could be something that you see Ten Hag do on occasion. I don't think it'll be plan A, but I think it's definitely something that I could imagine happening. And I'm actually going to give a correction there. I said that Sancho and Antony played on the wing. Sometimes it was also Sancho and Bruno. Sometimes it was also, I think, Bruno and Antony a couple times. It varied depending on who was available and the opposition. But I'm pretty sure Bruno was pretty much always playing, whether he started at 10 and Weghorst came on at the half, or he just started at right wing. And he was, I remember him being very good in that run as well.
Yeah, agreed. I think, so when you bring this up, do you just mean it as a historical lesson, or do you mean to bring it into the present day in the context of Xerxes?
Yeah, so I think you could see United doing this with Xerxes and Højlund or Rashford as the number nine. I think Højlund probably more likely based on what we've seen over the last season and Højlund's performances and growing importance to the team. I don't necessarily think United are going to do something like a 3-5-2 or, you know, some kind of four at the back, two up front, but also Bruno central system. I still think that's relatively unlikely at this stage. We'll talk about the rumors linking to three center backs, but the long story short is I don't actually think they're expecting to get three center backs in. So I think what's most likely is United stick to this 4-2-3-1. And I think within this 4-2-3-1, that's how you get two strikers in. You play Bruno wide and you play Xerxes kind of behind Højlund in this like secondary goal threat role. Yeah. What do you think?
I understand why you're saying this. I agree something we'll see. I personally, and I know you shared this conviction to a certain extent, do not love the idea of two strikers, whether or not the one striker is the second striker or an attacking midfielder, I think is immaterial when the player is Xerxes. I don't love the idea of two strikers and Bruno wide. I just think it's really difficult to progress the ball and dominate matches and also create chances when you have two center forwards and you don't have two true wide players who can play in isolation. I just think that's a very, very difficult dynamic to maintain. And
do you think that would be different with someone like Xerxes, though?
It could be.
As a player who I think could drop deep and progress the ball more than someone like Weghorst?
I definitely think it could be. That said, I still think you wind up with some really strange dynamics. Like, it's not something I would want to see as the week-in, week-out lineup. Yeah, that's I guess what I think about that. I just think Bruno in a wide role is such a strange, I understand why you would do it, but I don't know. When I picture Bruno in a wide role, I picture the sitting on the ball in the early crossing spaces and just kind of playing, either playing like these unpressured balls into the box that aren't that penetrative and really are more speculative, or a lot of like side passing and back passing and I don't know. I just, it's not the role where I think he has his biggest impact on the game. I guess to summarize my thoughts, I think this is a possibility. I don't think it's necessarily a bad idea. It still doesn't excite me very much.
Yeah. I think there are some rumors that in the market that suggest that United could be considering moving to a two-striker system. We talked about how Xerxes is not really a natural nine, and there were links to three strikers before Xerxes was signed, the other two being Ivan Toney and Jonathan David, both of whom I would say are more natural number nines, perhaps more natural goal scorers to different extents. And I don't think those links have completely died since Xerxes' signing was kind of given the green light. In particular, Tony links are still kind of on the surface here. I'll be honest, I don't particularly have an interest in United signing Ivan Toney. I've talked about many times about how he's kind of a flawed goal scorer as a whole. I think he's a very good player. I think he's probably actually the best of these three players overall.
Those three players being?
Xerxes, Tony, David. Yeah. But I don't think he is the best goal scorer. I don't think that he is the best value for money, given that he turns 28 this year. I just don't think this is the direction United should particularly be looking to go at. I think Tony's main value prop is his ability to take down balls from range and turn them into attacking play. That's something that's been basically a hallmark of Brentford's play since they got promoted to the Premier League. I think Xerxes offers a lot of that. And the main thing Xerxes doesn't offer is the aerial stuff. So unless United are looking for this option where they're going to go long to a striker a lot, I think this is a lot of money to pay for a striker who just kind of adds to the pile. As for David, if it's reasonable, I think it would be an interesting proposition. I think there's definitely flaws there. I've watched him a lot playing for the Canadian national team, as well as Lille, because I've gone to watch Lenny Yoro, who we're going to talk about today, and a couple other players from Lille. But I think more interesting than whether United will sign these players individually is whether this actually does signal that they're looking for Xerxes to play a different role. Yeah, I don't know. I guess that doesn't really leave us anywhere different to, we're not really particularly looking to see it with Bruno. So what's going on here? Why are United being linked to more strikers?
I mean, it could be a move to a two-striker system. Something that we have discussed previously on the podcast, I think, is that a 4-4-2 out-of-possession shape has become pretty ubiquitous in top-level football. And so you could make the argument that the next step of that evolution would be maybe devolution, in that you return to personnel that more archetypally fits 4-4-2s. For whatever reason, maybe because you think the game is getting more physical and direct, and or that the game should be more physical and direct, and that facilitates it. Maybe because you don't want to have so much change between your in-possession and out-of-possession shapes. I think that was actually one of the problems United had last season, was they often wound up stretched in possession and failed to create compactness out of possession. But for the most part, those arguments sit on shaky ground, I would say. They're mostly, I think you have to want to believe it to believe it, that the game is going in that direction. So, yeah, I think I'm skeptical that this is, we're heading in the direction of a three-striker system. That said, I do think you could view Xerxes as if he's not a center forward in the traditional sense, and feel like you need a third striker who maybe eats up more lone center forward minutes, giving you something different. So I don't know that it really tells us that much.
Yeah, I think I'm mostly on the same page. I do think that we're seeing signs of a lot of big managers in the sport trying to find ways to get more box threat into teams without changing to a two-striker system explicitly. I think Arsenal had a, in my opinion, failed attempt to sign Kai Havertz and play him in the midfield last season. I say failed not because I think the signing has been necessarily a flop, but because Havertz has ended up playing up front and not as much in midfield. And I think there's reasons for that. We've also seen City try to play Julian Alvarez in midfield in situations where Kevin De Bruyne has been absent in particular. I think, again, it's the same trend. A lot of teams are realizing that physicality and numbers in the box lead to goals about as much as elite creative players do. And when you have elite creative players, they still need those types of box presences in order to convert them into goals. And so I don't think that this is something that is completely off the radar of United's board and executives, but if you're asking me, I wouldn't really be looking to sign another striker over some other positions this summer. I don't really think you're going to see Højlund and Xerxes together a lot next season, as long as Bruno is a regular. Maybe late in matches, but not from the start. And I don't really think Yeah, I mean, if you get a good deal for another striker, maybe you go for it, but I don't see it. It's one of those that I'll put a pin on and reevaluate if and when links to Tony and David really become talks of advanced negotiations, I think.
That makes sense. I think, just to touch on one last thing that you mentioned, and I guess we have already discussed it in one respect, but I want to sort of reframe. If you don't have Bruno in this side, your formational flexibility, I think, increases significantly, because I think he requires a lot of accommodation. And that's something I suspect that fact, or if you don't feel it's a fact, that analysis will become more relevant over the next 18 months. Which is not to say that I think Bruno is sold next summer or anything, but rather that this is going to be a dialogue, especially if United are to get better, how they're going to get more flexible, physical, out of possession. And I think that involves a conversation surrounding Bruno.
Yeah, I also think, I mean, we're kind of getting there already, but it leads to a discussion about attacking options in general. United increasingly look a bit bloated in attacking areas, and I personally have felt that United should look to sign a winger of a particular profile. I still think that profile is missing in the squad, but United have a lot of attacking options here. You're looking at Rasmus Højlund, Joshua Zirkzee, Bruno Fernandes, we've already discussed, Marcus Rashford, Alejandro Garnacho, Amad Diallo, Antony's still around, Jadon Sancho has come back to training, Mason Mount seems like he's hopefully going to have a better run of fitness, and we talked about how he's going to have an increased role in the team this season, if he is fit, and also Scott McTominay is still around. We had some links this week suggesting that he might have interest abroad, but as it stands, it looks quite likely that he's still going to be around next season. And so that's what, 9 options? Am I counting that right? 5 wingers. It's 10 options. It's 10 options for 4 positions. And not quite, I would say, spanning the full set of, you know, attacking profiles that a side like United could use. Like I said, United could still use another winger. They could still use another last 9 presence at number 9, perhaps, in certain situations. What do you think the pecking order looks like in some of these positions? How do you think players like, maybe we'll start with someone like Mount. How do you think Mount really fits in to United's options here?
Well, I think that'll depend on midfield signings and wing signings. If there's a winger to come in, which, well, we'll see. I think probably it won't happen, because my guess is that the manager doesn't think it's a priority. I think that's wrong, but I'm also projecting. I don't even know if that is how they view the situation.
Yeah, I'm 50-50 on that. Like, I think I personally would like a winger, but I think they might also be looking at it in terms of squad numbers. Like, they'll sign a winger if they're able to get rid of current wingers.
Yeah, but what wingers are they looking to get rid of? They're not looking to get rid of Rashford. They're not looking to get rid of Garnacho. They're not looking to get rid of Antony. So
I think it's Sancho.
Okay, Sancho.
I don't really want to get deep into it, but Greenwood and Ahmad. Ahmad.
I don't think Greenwood factors into this.
I don't think he factors into it from a conversation of who's going to play for the first team next season, but I do think he might from a perspective of financing a move for a winger. But anyway.
I suppose. My guess is they still view, the manager, I think, still views Antony as a viable option at right wing to start. Garnacho and Rashford clearly are. That alone, 3 wingers right there, could be, like, I think you could very reasonably, if you do believe in Antony, say that's that sorted. On to the next thing. Like, I don't think most teams carry more than 4 wingers that they plan on using for significant minutes.
Yeah, I do think Ahmad's looking at significant minutes as well next season, based on how he ended last season.
I agree. But anyway, my point being, I got away from the question. Mount. I don't know. I don't know. I don't even feel comfortable making a projection, to be honest, because I don't think, you know, if the if the transfer window ended today, your starting midfielder next season is probably Casemiro, Mainoo, Bruno. And he's the first guy off the bench. But that just seems wildly inefficient. Like, I think he should be playing a lot of minutes from a talent level. Not to mention that I think you just want to get Casemiro off the pitch. But you can't play Mainoo, Mount, and Bruno. Like, you're just surrendering so much of a physical deficit. You are with Casemiro as well, but in a different way. And then, I don't know. I don't think you're starting Mount at left or right wing, which means he's not starting. So I don't really see a world where he starts next season as part of the first 11, to be honest.
I think it's quite difficult to get him into a midfield three that also contains Bruno. I think you need... Again, we're talking about how I think you need a relatively complete profile who could go in behind those players. A player who I don't really particularly think exists in the current European football climate, which puts you in an odd position. I definitely agree. And it's probably something that we kind of knew when Mount joined last summer, but felt that Mount was a good enough player that it was probably worthwhile to get him anyways.
I mean, I didn't think Casemiro was going to drop off the way he did, and I thought
there
was the possibility of getting another midfielder who could play in those deeper areas who would get things together better than Casemiro did, under which circumstances you could play Mount and Bruno. But I also think I'm lower on Bruno's adaptability than I was then, and I was already pretty low on it then, but I just think, I don't know. Bruno is both a huge problem and completely irreplaceable in this team. Yeah. I think that will be thematically something I'm thinking about all season, to be honest with you.
Yeah, yeah, and I think we spoke about how, in the episode about Manuel Ugarte, we spoke about how it's possible that Ugarte signing, I think, makes it very difficult to play him with Mount, because I think he roams, and I don't think you want to hold Mount to a very positionally disciplined role, whereas I think with someone like Mainoo, it's probably okay. He can impact matches from extremely deep and then have moments where he goes forward. Whereas I think a lot of Mount's game, especially out of possession, is reliant on being able to go forward. So yeah, it leaves you in a weird position. I think what ultimately ends up happening is Mount ends up playing a lot of minutes because he's very good, but not in a specifically defined position or role. I think you see him play left wing sometimes. You see him play right wing sometimes. You see him play number 10 sometimes. You see him play number 8 sometimes when, you know, you want to rest Mainoo. Because it doesn't look like United are getting someone else who can rotate for Mainoo as well as he would be able to. I guess Eriksen's still around, but I don't particularly see him starting a lot of matches in deep areas.
Yeah, he's in the picture, but I would not use him. I don't think that's even...
I don't think I would start him. I think it might be good to give him, like... Actually, no, I changed that answer. I wouldn't start him in matches where you're worried about the opposition, but I... think if he's going to reduce the minutes Mainoo plays, I'd be playing like Europa League groups, early stage cups. I think you could probably get him quite a bit of minutes, but I also think he's unhappy with his playing time, which is
another factor. Oh, he definitely is. That's why I think he's gone. But I don't know. I don't think I would use him very much at all. I take your point that he could have some utility, but I think this team needs to get more athletic, and I don't think that you can do. I think there are starters. I think Casemiro, Bruno. Neither of them is athletic enough to be starting for this team anymore. Bruno is so talented at everything else that it's not a priority with him. But I don't feel the same way about Eriksen. And I also think he's significantly less physically robust than Bruno is. So I think given the option, I would prefer to just phase him out completely. But I hear the point that he has utility. It's just...
I think I've just consigned myself to the fact that if players are around, they're going to play. Like whether it's, you know, I don't think Wan-Bissaka looks like he's going anywhere this summer. I think he's going to play minutes next season. And I think that's also where it begins to get a little bit complicated because I think you kind of create this picture of wanting to get a lot of these sales done. And I think United will. But you still have a lot of players on these contracts on high wages that clubs are just not looking at buying out at this stage. And I think what that means is you start to introduce some of these players back into the team, and then it gets a little confusing. Like Sancho, I don't really know what role he plays. Like I think he gets minutes, but I don't know what he really adds.
Are we seriously thinking Sancho has any chance of staying? How do you mend what happened last season? I see that, but that seems insane to me. Like, this was just a complete standoff for, like, months. Months where he just didn't do anything.
We don't veer too much into the territory of speculation of behind the scenes drama, but like, I think they're wondering whether they'll be able to sell him. They have zero negotiation power with the standoff. So I think they are mending relationships in an attempt to get the best outcome for everyone. Whether that means Sancho now leaves, there's been interest from a couple teams, but none of them are willing to pay money, like money.
Is he worth money? I don't think so, but...
He's a 25-year-old... 25-year-old? He's a 24-year-old Premier League-level attacking midfielder. I think that means he's... Regardless of how high on the ladder you think he is in the Premier League, I think that means he's worth at least... And no? 25, 30, 35 mil.
When you're paying him £350,000 a week, though, he's probably worth significantly less than that.
Well, that's up to him to decide whether he wants to go play minutes somewhere or make that paycheck. Like, I have no idea here. But I do think that if he's in the squad, I don't think it's particularly likely that he's just gonna sit. Because they need to sell him. If they're not going to use him. So either they're going to use him because they want to use him, or they're going to use him because they want to sell him. That's the way I see it. You build a squad, you play the players in the squad. And if the players aren't good enough, that reflects in the results, and then you get better players. I'm not imagining these scenarios where, you know, you have 11 good players and 11 bad players, and the 11 good players play every week until they run into the ground. I just don't think that's going to happen. The time and time again, we've proven that that's not going to happen. And I think the gap between the good and the bad in the squad has grown, and it still doesn't happen. So
I agree. It's just...
Yeah, it's just bizarre. I get it.
Not even just, like... I don't think you need to have Sancho and Eriksen around. Like, I think you can... I think if you made it a priority, players like that could be gone. And, yeah, maybe you don't get huge upgrades over them, but you could get specific... profiles filled.
I think on that we'll leave it there. I think Mount plays good minutes. I think Ahmad plays decent minutes. No idea about Antony. No idea about Sancho. No idea about Eriksen. No idea about Casemiro. I mean,
if Casemiro's here, he's starting a ton of games, I think. But he shouldn't be, like, you cannot have him be here.
Yeah, I don't know. I think if someone, like, I don't know, throwing a name here, Ugarte, comes in, I think Casemiro probably doesn't start a ton of games. He was benched for the FA Cup final seemingly while fit. So, for McTominay and Amrabat and Maynou. So, I don't know. There's still some noise that Amrabat might join permanently. I have no idea whether that will happen. So, I think we need some time here, but I'll summarize with this. And you might even cut some of this out. But I think Mount plays a lot if fit. I think Ahmad plays a lot if fit. I think Xerxes plays a lot if fit. Hoyland, Garnacho, Rashford go without saying. Bruno goes without saying. And then the others, you might see one of them play more than a little bit. McTominay might be my best bet if he stays.
Yeah, if McTominay stays, he's playing like 25-90s.
I actually think he's probably the most deserving of the minutes, frankly.
Oh, I agree. No, I agree.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk about center backs. I think we have a little more clarity there. Matthijs de Ligt seems very likely at this point. Bayern seem to want 50 million euros, which is 42 million Great British pounds, possibly plus some add-ons, depending on the sources you believe. Seems like United want to pay somewhere in the high 30s, rising into the low 40s of pounds, but I'm just throwing numbers here. I actually have no connections that suggest that information whatsoever. This seems like good news, I think, especially considering the fiasco that's going on with the other two center backs that United are linked to.
Yeah, I mean, we talked pretty in-depth about this the other day. I think this is a good move. I think it makes sense. I don't think it's too expensive. I think this is a talented player. I think he meets the physical standard that I think you have to start holding this team to. I don't think it's going to be transformational, but I don't think we're going to lament this. So you can start him. You can start him, and I don't think he's going to be the thing that tears this team down.
Great. Now we'll talk about the other two. We have some rumors that United could be signing as many as 3 center backs this summer. Whether that's to be interpreted as they're bidding for 3 different center backs, expecting not to get all 3, and if they get all 3, they'll just sign all 3. Or they don't actually want 3, or they actively want 3, and they will search for others in the event that the next 2 names we talk about do not work out. I'll leave that to you, the listener. I think the most likely outcome is probably neither of these 2 happen, and United go looking for 1 more. We already know United missed out on Todibo. And now United have seemingly had a bid accepted for Lenny Yoro, who we've previously said was top target. The bid was, in quote, in excess of 50 million euros. I think that means that's what Florian Plettenberg is saying. So it would be 40 to 50 million initial in euros, and then rising over 50 million euros with add-ons. We've talked about Yoro here and there on the podcast, but maybe now is the time to talk about him more substantively. It seems like the last thing here, he's been offered a 5+1 contract, apparently. The last step here is for him to decide whether he wants to join United or Real Madrid. Real Madrid reportedly struggling for finances to sign players, given that they've just added Mbappe to their squad. And so they might look to get Yoro for free next year, in what is the most typical Real Madrid move I've ever seen. Or they might look to negotiate down the price with Lille this summer, if Yoro really wants to join them. But they've accepted the offer from United, according to multiple really big, prominent journalists. Case, what are your thoughts on Yoro and whether United should sign him?
United should definitely sign him. I think you and I were speaking just before the podcast, and we agreed of these 3 center backs, Yoro is the worst right now. And I don't think it's particularly close. I think Braithwaite and Licht are better by a good amount. That said, Yoro is 18. He doesn't turn 19 until November. And I think he's clearly capable of playing center back in the Premier League. And that alone is huge. Like, United should be, and I think have made some indications that they are pivoting towards targeting high potential, very young players who can contribute immediately, but who perhaps are not absolute top line players in real time. And I think that's a really, really good thing. It's really, really difficult to buy the best center back in the world at the peak of their powers. It is way easier to find the kids who are demonstrating the potential to be that and can contribute and be a part of the first team picture in real time and to get those players. I still think Yoro will ultimately go to Real Madrid, but if this same thing was happening 3 years from now, where Yoro's 21 and he's had, 4 seasons of top flight football, there's absolutely no chance he goes to United over Real Madrid. But right now you have a chance. And I think it's a really, really good sign. I am all in on this. Not because I think he's guaranteed to be transformational eventually, just because I think he has a chance to be. And how many players in European football can you say that about?
Yeah, so we said before, he's tall, composed on the ball, right-footed, fast, appears to be the perfect partner for Lisandro Martinez, really, when we made the list of traits we wanted in a player to do that. So why would you say at this point he's the worst of the 3? Even though, I mean, I agree with that, but I probably want to dive into it further.
Yeah, so you mentioned aerial strength. I don't think he's as strong aerially as the other 2 by a long shot.
Yeah.
The other thing that I really don't love about him is I think he's very reliant on his pace and agility in comparison to being a contact forward defender, being aggressive. There's a lot of, I've mentioned this to you as well, a lot of instances where he'll get tight on the, or he should be getting tight on the back of an opposition attacker who is receiving the ball to feet with their back to goal. But instead of getting really tight and imposing himself physically on them, closing off their angles so that they can't turn him. A lot of the time, he'll sort of come in soft and allow them to turn and bet on his agility and straight line pace and acceleration to just win the foot race. And that works for him because he's super agile. But I don't think it is the right way to handle these situations, because I think the attacker is almost always at a disadvantage when they have their back to goal. And once you allow them to turn and face you up, especially at a higher level, if he comes to the Premier League, I think he's going to face a lot more attackers who can turn and burn and actually beat him in those battles, whether or not 100% of the time, enough to create threat. I would really like to see that tendency change. And I also think he's a little too eager to go to ground. Again, because he's so agile, he really looks to, especially when box defending, take advantage of that. And I think sometimes it can result in, especially with a more guilely attacker, it can result in him going to ground too early and not necessarily fouling, but just letting a shot get off or a cross get in. All of those are kind of nitpicks, because I think ultimately this is an 18-year-old who has a ton of really awesome strengths. But those are the things that stood out to me.
Yeah, I pretty much agree with all of it. I think his standout is definitely his ground defending at this point, and in particular his one-on-one defending and his reading of play in general. I think you're right about pretty much everything you've said. Yeah, in terms of the air, he plays like someone who's recently become as big as he is. And so I think with time, I would bet on him to get a lot better in the air. And I think on the ball right now, his passing profile is probably a lot like De Ligt. A lot of passes out to the fullbacks. A lot of passes to his partner at center back. I think he has much better fundamentals, though, technically, from an on-ball standpoint. So I would back him to eventually be better than De Ligt on the ball, both in passing and carrying. And he's also so composed and assured that I think, yeah, even if he doesn't, he's going to be a very press-resistant player. And so, yeah, I think this is a player who can come into the first team. I think it's actually perfect if you also get De Ligt. And then you have that combination of, like, guy who can start now, has experience in big matches, is still relatively young, and then the guy who's eventually going to surpass him if De Ligt doesn't hit that high ceiling that that you want defenders to have for a title-winning team. And I think they can play together. I think you can play either of them with Maguire. I think you can play either of them with Martinez. So I think this would be awesome. Yes, United might lose out on goals because of his, right now, I'd say early stage aerial ability relative to the Premier League level. And yeah, there are better ball players out there. Like someone like Todibo is a more refined center back on the ball for sure for me. But ultimately, I think this is just about the best signing United can possibly make for a team that wants to be elite in 2 to 3 years. So I think that's pretty good for Euro for now.
Yeah, I agree. We'll do an even deeper dive, I think, if this becomes imminent.
Sounds good. Branthwaite. So nothing's really happened on the Branthwaite front. I don't know if we've talked about United putting in a second bid that was definitely rejected. It was like $45 million plus $5 million in add-ons. Everton have maintained that they want a fee in the region of £65 to £70 million. I think there's an update now that might have made that figure rise even more, which is that Everton seemingly are about to sell Amadou Onana to Aston Villa for £50 million, which relieves a lot of their financial needs at this point. I really feel like United have kind of lost here. I think they probably should have gone and paid the £50 million for Onana and left it with Branthwaite. And I think now they've gone for Branthwaite and they've gotten neither. I think interest on Onana has kind of cooled in the last month or two, but personally, I would have really liked to see him join, given some of the stuff we were just discussing about the midfield, need to replace Casemiro, the need to add physicality. Yeah, Case, what do you make of this? It seems like at this point, I feel like Branthwaite's not going to end up joining. Just because I don't think United are going to end up paying those staggering fees.
Yeah, I think this is, first of all, I think this is basically dead, is what it seems like. Second of all, I like Branthwaite. I think he's a better player than Yoro right now. Obviously, there's the advantage of him being left-footed. So, you know, those players are just at a premium in Premier League football. But it's also a bit of a strange fit because I wouldn't want to play him on the right side of a back four. Right center back in a back four, that is.
Yeah, ideally not.
But yeah, in terms of general profile, I mean, he's got, I think, very strong recovery speed. He's got just general strong physical profile. I think he's good on the ball. I think it's nice that he feels comfortable receiving on his right foot, despite being a left-footed center back. I don't get super excited about him. I don't know that I see him becoming one of the best in the world, but I think he's easily good enough to play matches for United right now. I think he's, like, in terms of level, I think he's pretty similar to De Ligt, to be honest. So,
yeah, I don't entirely, I don't really disagree. I think you probably are getting a more well-rounded physical profile with him than De Ligt. I think the on-ball ceiling is higher, but I don't necessarily think that he is fully refined as a defender. He has been exposed a fair bit this season in the Premier League with Everton, and that's partially because Everton's system has been dismantled a lot because they're bottom half side in the Premier League, and that hurts perception of centre-backs for sure. But I also think that he has some refinement in his game, so I wouldn't necessarily say he's in a different tier to De Ligt in terms of quality right now. I would also say I would not pay 70 million for a player who... I don't think it's clear that he becomes better than Lisandro Martinez, to be honest. And so I think for the next 4 or 5 years, if fit, you are starting Lisandro Martinez. Unless injuries have taken their toll on him and he's just not going to be able to play the kind of minutes that United want. And so, yeah, I mean, I think De Ligt and Yoro at this point would be an ideal scenario. I think what's more likely is you miss out on Yoro and then United go to another name on the list. I'd say it's been quite unfortunate. Like, I think the rules on Todibo were quite specific, and then I think they had a good negotiation plan with Branthwaite, but someone else has come in for Onana, and then I think Yoro is the right target and the right fee, and he's just likely not to choose United. So, not really a ton you can do here, but I think if you end up with De Ligt and Yoro, that would be amazing. And if you end up with De Ligt and then another young center back who's good enough to play with a high ceiling, right-footed, I think that would be awesome. So I'm not too worried at this stage.
Yeah, I agree. I think there seems to be strong intent here. They're identifying good profiles. So whether or not you get these names, these names being Yoro and Branthwaite and or Branthwaite, I'm not too pressed about it because I don't think... Yoro, I'm a bit more pressed about because I think, like I said, there's that huge ceiling. But ultimately, I think there are other players out there who I think can do this job and aren't like massive downgrades. And I'm not super keen on the idea of 70 million for any of these names for different reasons. So,
yeah. I mean, I think I'd also add that I wouldn't even sign all three of them if they were all 50 million. I'd pick two. So I just think there are some murmurs of signing three center backs. I don't think I would do that at this point. I would spend the money on an attacking player. I would keep Harry Maguire. I just think that you got to upgrade the squad across the entire board, not just at center back. And I think two center backs will do a lot for this team. So... yeah, let's do a bit of talk about left backs. We've seen some quiet links. I think there's a chance this is where United are going to go next after Xerxes being done to left backs. Some decent-ish tier. No, I wouldn't really say so. Most of these are coming from like sources outside the core few that report on transfers at United. The two names that have come up are Ferdi Kadıoğlu, who has played for Turkey at the World Cup and also plays for Fenerbahce, plays left back. He's right-footed. He also plays right back. He also plays a number of other positions, but I think he'd primarily play left back and right back for United. The fee range is reported to be around 35 million euros. Some of these reports are saying United want to pay 25 million euros. The other link here is Miguel Gutierrez of Girona, who has a 35 million euro release clause. Gutierrez is one of the leaders for left backs in Europe in terms of creativity last season. I've gone and watched a lot of matches of Gutierrez this week. I think it's relatively unlikely at this point, to the point where I wouldn't talk about it unless more links arise, but this is worth keeping an eye on. Case, do you think it's important that United get a left back? And very briefly, what do you think of these names?
I do think it's important that United get a left back. I think I was saying to you before we recorded that, I don't think that you can trust or you can rely on Luke Shaw to be healthy. It looks like Malacia is back today.
He is back in training, yeah. But we'll see what that means. I don't think Ten Hag was using him regularly even before he got injured, but towards the end of the 2022-23 season. So, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see about that, but I think you need another left back. And so, as for Cadayoglu, I'll be honest, I've only seen him play left back for Turkey in this tournament. Or Turkia, I think is how they've been asked to be referred to. I'll add two things. I'm not enthusiastic about the idea of a right-footed left back. That I'm not really interested in that. And 35 million euros sounds like a lot to me. As for Gutierrez, I'm more enthusiastic about that. Partially, it's, you know, same release clause, 35 million euros, but I think he has played at a higher level. I've seen more of him at left back at a club level, and I think he's very, very technical. I think you have more notes because you watched a ton of him this week, it seemed like. Yeah, but I think of these two, I definitely lean strongly towards Gutierrez, mostly on the basis that I don't want a right-footed player in that position.
Yeah. I'll start with Cadayoglu. I think he's been fantastic at the Euros. I haven't really watched him outside the Euros. But I would guess that the press resistance probably translates to club level quite well based on what I've seen. I would guess that he has the athleticism to play at the top level, but probably isn't a standout athlete at the top level. We'll talk more about this if and when the links become more prominent. I don't like that he's right-footed either, but I do think it would be nice that he could play at right back, if that is the case. I think that's a very good intermediate solution to a problem that also exists at right back, where Diogo Dalot starts every game as it stands. And so that might be something that's worth keeping an eye on. And maybe you even look at signing him as a full-time right back. I have no idea at this point.
I'd be Gutierrez. More interested in that. I would be more interested in that.
It's definitely worth it. If he gets linked more, I'll go through matches of him and him at right back and left back over the last few seasons. Gutierrez is a very interesting player. I think he's also quite press resistant. I don't think he is Luke Shaw levels of press resistant. I think he's quite a good deep carrier. I don't think he's a Luke Shaw level deep carrier. I think he's quite a good deep passer. I don't think he's a Luke Shaw level deep passer. But that's what happens when you're looking to replace, I think, probably one of, if not the best left back of the last generation at those things. I think he is better than Luke Shaw in the final third. But I also think that a lot of his game is based on inverting. Girona played Savio, who has joined Man City, as their left winger for most of last season. And so Savio played as like a wide left winger, and then Gutierrez almost played as like a central midfielder, a left central midfielder in kind of like a de facto three-man midfield for a lot of the season. And so that got him closer to goal than he would probably be for a team like United, who have Rashford and Garnacho and Sancho as left wing options. And so I also don't think he's like an outstanding athlete. Again, we'll talk about this more in the event that this actually gets closer to happening. I think he's a very good athlete. I would be happy with this as a deal for 35 million euros. I'm not screaming up for it to happen because I don't think it solves all the problems. There are a couple names who are probably cheaper than this and overlapping fullbacks more traditionally, I think, or could be. Not that Gutierrez can't do that. Actually, there's a chance that his skill set projects well to it. But fullbacks who are doing it right now and are cheaper than 35 million euros and possibly have a higher ceiling because of their physical traits. We'll talk about those more in the event that they get linked. But right now, they're probably not as refined as Gutierrez. So yeah, and as far as the options go, I think United need a left back. I think Gutierrez is a pretty good option based on what's available in the market right now. I think this will probably be contingent on sales. Based on what we've seen, I think the first thing was Xerxes. I think the second thing is the center backs. I think after you get two center backs, it's going to be a central midfielder. And then I think after central midfield, you probably look at left back. And so this might be like a 2 or 3 weeks down the line kind of thing by the time you see what happens. Especially if United miss out on Euro, a couple new names are going to come up, I think. So we'll see what happens. And then you're going to go to midfield and you're going to see a couple names for that. So yeah, we'll definitely keep our eye on it, but I think it was worth a mention given that it's a pretty big need for United. I think you will have a lot of fullback struggles next season if Malacia doesn't magically become very good again. And you find someone from the academy, perhaps. Or you find that one of your center backs can magically play right back to a really high level, which I'm not anticipating based on the current center backs that United have. So I think that's where we leave it for now.
Yeah, I think the one thing I would add on is, or not add on, I guess I would ask you, do you think left back is the priority over central midfield?
No. No, I don't.
Yeah, I don't either.
I just think that maybe this is personal bias or like anguish, but I want to see the central midfield sorted. Like, I want to see United produce a season of central midfield to a high level. We have not seen that ever in the lifespan of this podcast or in the like 8 or 9 years before that. I don't think we've seen it in the current climate of football. And so I think we got close with Casemiro, Eriksen, and Bruno in the 2022-23 season, but it has to be younger. It has to be more athletic. It has to be more press resistant than that. I'm keen on seeing that sorted out.
Respect the Carrick, Rooney, Fellaini midfield.
Carrick, Herrera, Fellaini in 14-15 is probably the closest thing we've seen to a midfield that is athletic, press resistant, and has attacking threat. I'm actually serious.
Did Herrera play that? I remember the whole thing with Herrera.
It was like a 6-match run under Van Gaal, yeah. where that was the midfield three.
Was that the one where we beat Liverpool at Anfield?
Liverpool at Anfield, beat Man City, beat Spurs.
Yeah.
It's not even really worth mentioning. Like, Marouane Fellaini was a starter, but like that was probably the best I've seen. I mean, Casemiro, Eriksen, and Bruno is probably better overall in terms of player quality, but I don't think they were press resistant, and I don't think they were athletic, and I think teams exposed that. So, yeah, it's time to sort that out. But I don't know. It's a tough one. I really think you then end up betting on Shaw being fit, because what do you do otherwise? You promote a youth player, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's literally all you can do. Or you get Reguilón on loan again.
It's not looking great. Like, the fullback situation next season is not looking great. But I'd rather see, you know, I think United are approaching this the right way right now, at least from what I've seen. Like, links to players who, you know, you can only work within the budget you have, but I don't think United should go sign all 15 million players so they can afford to get 8. I think they need to scout properly the players that improve the team over the next 5 years, not the next one. If that involves spending a little extra to get, you know, Euro instead of a young center back who's not ready to play at all, or Xerxes instead of a 28-year-old Tony, or whatever other equivalent moves, I think that makes sense. If they miss a couple positions and it's a bit goofy next season, I think that's just the price you pay, as long as the activity that does happen is good.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. In broad strokes. In broad strokes.
It won't be something that I love that I said when Wan-Bissaka starts 30 matches next season.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But it is what it is. You can't, like, it's very hard to need 8 players for Manchester United and go out and get 8 players in a window who are actually going to still be around in 2 years.
Yeah, Rome wasn't built in a day. It's true.
All right, I think we should go to No Details with that. No Details. This is the segment where we allow you to ask anything you like, but with one exception. The questions cannot be about football. And this week we have a question that Gene Nifton actually asked last week that we quite liked. He asked, what's the worst advice you've ever been given? For example, don't study a certain subject or don't visit a there. I guess he meant a place. When in fact, you shouldn't have listened to those people. Case. I'm going to let you go first because I actually have no idea what I'm going to say here.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm going
to
say.
I need to say advice that's given by someone who doesn't listen to this podcast.
I mean, I don't know that I have, like, this has definitely happened a few times. I don't know that this is a specific piece of advice, but anytime someone, like, anytime I've set a goal and someone's been like, are you sure you can do that? That's going to be really, that might be too much. Like, get out of here. Like it's never useful advice in my experience. Like, much better to try things that you're unsure you can do and later fail, exactly, than it is to just be like, oh, I'm not sure I can do it. You're right. Maybe you're right. And then not, because you could have. And I've definitely had people multiple times, people I trust and who I generally give me good advice, do that to me. And I just have no space for it anymore, I think. Not that I'm accomplished, but like I just think it's the wrong way to think about going about things. So,
yeah, I think it's easy for people you care about to try and safeguard you from being hurt when you don't meet your goals.
Yep.
And like, in some cases, I think it's useful, but in most cases I don't really think so. I say that as someone who probably sets very lofty goals and then like burns myself into the ground trying to get you there. But yeah, I do think there's a lot of value in like trying really hard for something and not quite getting there. I think people, unless the failures kill you, that's an exception, but I think people over-index, like I think people over not even rate, I think people over-index success. And so like, I think if you look at like society and what people consider to be success at like setting a goal, I think people who set 10 goals and meet one, or like set 10 goals and meet four, are generally regarded as very successful, whereas people who set like 2 goals and meet both of them are not. And I don't think that means you should go set 10 goals, to be honest, because I think the people who set 2 goals are putting themselves in a better spot probably to achieve those 2. But more of the point I'm trying to make is, I think, yeah, there are many times when I've set a goal, gotten close to it, and even though I didn't accomplish it, I got very far. I improved something that I wanted to improve a lot, or achieve something, or got closer to achieving something that I wanted to achieve. The only case in which I haven't found that to be true is when the goal is so outlandish that I don't even get remotely close. And then I feel like I'm like, oh, I'm not going to achieve that goal. I might as well just tank it. So I think it's a balance of setting things that are relatively achievable, but then also not setting things that are so achievable that you know you're going to get there anyways. You gotta stretch a little bit. So, and a lot of people will tell you not to, I think, but I agree that it's not a little bit absurd with stuff like this. So they don't ever, I don't often get like, you can't do that. I guess my recent like quarter life, this has been like the Twitter trending quarter life crisis, like white flag, but I have been considering training to run a marathon or a half marathon.
Bro, all of my friends. One of my friends just did an Ironman. The other one is doing an
Ironman?
Yeah, he did an Ironman in Austria. Like,
how did he do an Ironman?
I do not know.
Have you seen the what an Ironman entails?
Yeah. Yes, I have. It's like a marathon, like I'm off the top of my head, a marathon, 128-mile bike ride, and a 2.5-mile swim, something like that. But in the other order. Ridiculous.
No, I don't even think I could do a triathlon, to be honest with you. I could probably do it if I had trained a lot. Like, I need I need to up my swimming game is the main thing. I could probably do the bike. I could probably do the run. 10K. I'm at this point, I'm consistently able to run 10K. So that'd be not too bad. But yeah, 40K bike would stretch me, but I would need to train a lot to swim 1500 meters. So yeah. But yeah, I've been looking at doing a half marathon, and like, I don't know. I don't know if I'll make it, to be honest, in the time horizon that I'm thinking in my head. But
it has made me. You could definitely do a half marathon. I think
I could do it eventually. Yeah, I just don't know if I'll do it by the time I've set for myself.
What's the time you set for yourself?
Well, I don't want to say it on the podcast because then I feel like it's in the world. You know?
No, you have to say it now. You have to say it.
I've kind of been looking at doing the Toronto Marathon, which is in October, and I'm currently consistently running more than 10K. I will say two things about that. One is I have no idea if, like, I don't want to do it and then be tired for like 4 days after. Like, if I do it, I want to train properly, do it properly, and like be comfortable. I will say two things about that. One is I might not make it to that goal by October. I'm not sure yet. Two is when I was setting a goal to consistently run a 5K, I was like barely running 5Ks. And now that I set a goal to run a half marathon, I'm consistently running 10Ks without too much trouble. And so I think even though I might fail, it has been more beneficial to try something a little more ambitious.
Yeah. And I'm very doubtful that you won't achieve that. I think it is within your grasp.
I could probably do it now, but like I said, it would not be pleasant. Like I wouldn't enjoy it. And I'm also trying to like, especially this is a lot of life context, but I'm in my final semester of university, and like I've had a good run with academia, but at least for now I very much feel like this better be the tail end of my time doing school stuff. And I'm trying to, as a result, do other things in my life that I just purely enjoy. Partially as like self-discovery to find things that I enjoy, and partially just because if the main occupation is something that's currently not giving me a lot of joy, then I think I need to get it from other sources. And so I don't want to like run myself into the ground, literally. I want to do it on my terms and have fun. So that's also part of the goal, is to do something without growing to hate it over time by the time I reach the insane goal that I set.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a good way to do it. I think that's smart. Yeah.
All right. That was a great question. That was a good no detail.
It was a good no details question for which we did not have a response, but we're still able to talk for a while. So,
yeah, I will say I'm really lucky to have like a lot of role model figures in my life who give great advice. Like I'm not a great person to ask for this, but yeah. All right. With that, I'm sure we'll have more news by next week by the looks of it. United close to De Ligt, Xerxes announced Yoro will make his decision. It's beginning to sound like an Antoine Griezmann documentary. And
LeBron James. He's taking his talents to South Beach.
Yeah. Casemiro's son might join United. No, I don't know. You mentioned LeBron James. And if some of those don't happen, we'll have even more news. And probably if they do happen, we'll have even more news. New board seems like it's finally in motion. Omar Barrado has officially started as CEO. So we'll see what happens, and we'll be here to cover it for you. Monday uploads. We're getting back to more consistency, and hopefully we'll have some news of our own for you in the next few weeks. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Adios, amigos.
Hope you enjoyed this week's Devils in the Details. You can follow us at Devils ITD Pod on Twitter, or on a variety of streaming platforms. Our awesome theme music was made by Jacob Connor. You can find at Jacob J. Connor on Twitter. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.